Hello, everybody. This is the Breaking Lines English podcast. I'm Zach Lowe. I'm here today with my two English guests, Matt Aldridge.
Hiya.
And yeah, Matt, introduce yourself.
Hiya, hi there.
And Nima Tavali.
Good to be with you. How are you guys?
All right, so I think we're gonna start, but before we begin, I just want to give a special shout out to Louis Jacques, or Positionista on Twitter. Just wrote and published on Breaking Lines a piece that he had been working on for the past 5 months, and it's really amazing, and we're glad to have it on the site. So without further ado, let's get into today's topics. So the weekend we saw a few very interesting games in Calcio, from Juventus Napoli to Milan drawing against the worst team in Italy with an uncharacteristic Donnarumma mistake, I must say. And then we had midweek games in Italy. In the boot with the Coppa Italia with Juventus Napoli and Roma Lazio. So that was Juventus, as expected, they advanced. And as for the others, so it looks like it's going to be, well, it is Juventus Napoli, a repeat of the 2015 Coppa Italia final. So let's just discuss Lazio, right? So, summer of 2016, Bielsa comes in. Everybody thinks Marcelo Bielsa is going to be coach. He gives Lotito a list of transfer demands. None of them are met, and so he leaves. And so they have to bring back the interim coach, Simone Inzaghi. And now, next thing you know, it's April and they're fourth. So what can we make of this Lazio team?
Well, first of all, in my opinion, they have probably, if not the best, but definitely one of the three, four best midfields in the Serie A. I mean, Parolo, Felipe Anderson, Keita, and Milinkovic-Savic, who are just simply fantastic. It's a very well balanced midfield, both at both going forward and defending, and also you've got great wingers in Lulic and Dusan Basta. You've got Ciro Immobile. You got the bomber. You've got the number nine up front who scores goals. It's a very well balanced team, all the way from goalkeeper, all the way up to the striker, and also a very good coach who did really, really well last season, and who probably should have been given the chance to run the show from the start of the season, irrespective of Bielsa, because Bielsa, if his previous jobs are anything to go by, is that Bielsa comes in, tears everything up by the root. It goes well for a year, and then it comes crashing down like a plane crash. And many clubs haven't recovered from Bielsa's insanity almost. And that's why he's called El Loco in
El
Spanish.
Loco, exactly.
Yeah. So I think Inzaghi's showed that out of the two brothers so far, he's the one that is outshining his more famous brother. In terms of his coaching career, whereas the other one was outshining him in terms of his playing career, so far at least.
Matt?
I pretty much agree with all of that, but I also think I should add, I to be honest, I think they dodged a bullet by avoiding Bielsa. Well, they didn't avoid him, but they without him, I think they would have done better than with him personally. That's just me.
I think that it's with Bielsa, it's very high stakes. It's like being in Vegas. You can win a lot because he is a genius when he's on it, but he's also a crazy genius. So you got to take that mind-blowing kind of tactical new with his crazy with his craziness, and we saw his craziness just when he quit a very promising Lazio project, out of, you know, Lotito not meeting his demands. But I think in a way, so for that reason, Inzaghi may have been the safer choice as a coach, but he still doesn't have as much experience as Bielsa. And yet we see this Lazio team, they're fourth. They're ahead of Inter Milan, which, you know, just brought in several important players, important prospects, at least. They're ahead of Milan, who this was expected to be, you know, the season where, you know, starting from their early season form, they were going to finally make that rise back to Italy's elite. And they're ahead of Torino, who have the Capo Ceneri, what looks like will be the Capo Ceneri in Andrea Belotti. So ahead of some very good teams. And also, they lost kind of their talisman, if you will, in Antonio Candreva. Nima, I know you must be just sick of the sight of Lazio players coming to Inter by now, but what would you make of these players? Do you think that any of them have the potential to become really just world-class stars?
You mean the ones who are in Lazio now?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, Lucas Biglia, I forgot to mention him earlier. He's also a fantastic player, and he's the captain of Lazio. He's done really, really well there. I think Lucas Biglia is, I mean, if you look at, I mean, Hernanes, there was a reason why Hernanes, with all due respect to Lazio and their fans, there's a reason why Hernanes never ended up playing in a bigger club to begin with. He ended up playing in Lazio and spent most of his high heyday there. I think out of the ones they have right now, I think Keita Balde is the one that I would say, and Felipe Anderson to some extent, but especially if Keita Balde is the one that I would say has, and Milinkovic-Savic, those two are the ones who have the potential to be as good as you want, as good as you like, because they're young and they've already shown at a very young age that they can deliver consistently at a very high level. Other than that, yes, I am very fed up of Inter signing Lazio players, especially assigning Lazio players who are 29, 30 years old.
Yeah,
and I'm not, you know, and this is irrespective of Candreva. Candreva has shown for a very long time that he's a very good player, and I think that his problems at Inter is more connected to the way that he came into the team and the way that Inter started under De Boer. And the shakiness and all the chaos surrounding that. But still, despite having had a somewhat disappointing season, he has already, I mean, he's got 8 assists. Him and Icardi are the most lethal partnership in the Serie A in terms of chances created. And he's created 20 chances for Icardi on Candreva's passes. So there's... I don't want to throw him under the bus just yet, but although I find him very frustrating to watch, because sometimes he can do these amazing things and then can't simply just back, you know, so can't even pass the ball 3 yards without messing that up. So I think that, you know, I'm more annoyed about the Hernanes signing because it meant that we didn't sign Nainggolan, which I think was an historically idiotic.
One of the worst decisions in recent times in Italy.
Yeah, it's an idiotic decision of historic proportions, which Eric Tohir did, which kind of is a brilliant also.
It's a thorn in the side.
No, it's a brilliant illustration of his presidency as a whole when it comes to what happened on the pitch. Behind the scenes, in terms of finance and reorganizing Inter, he's done brilliantly well, but his sporting decisions have been, well, to be nice, I'd call them disastrous. To be fair, I'd call them a complete catastrophe. But thankfully, he's no longer in charge, and we're doing what you're supposed to do at the club now.
Right, and there is sort of a... I still think to this day there is kind of that nipping at the bit between Inter and Roma. I believe that Nainggolan was torn between the two while he was at Cagliari, right? And Caprari was the same, right?
Caprari is the same. But I mean, with Nainggolan, what happened was that Inter decided to go for Hernanes instead. which is a stupid decision, because Nainggolan was open to go to Inter. Obviously, the Indonesian connection, Erick Thohir being Indonesian, Nainggolan having Indonesian heritage, so he was very open to going to Inter. But instead, he went. Roma took him, and that's something that we've had to deal with ever since. Because Nainggolan is, in my opinion, one of the best central midfielders in the world, if not the best. He's certainly top three. Yeah. So that's something that Inter, you know, that was a stupid decision. But Caprari, yeah. we own Caprari. He's at Pescara. I hope Inter don't let him go. But there's talk of Inter sending Caprari as a part payment to Sassuolo to lower down the Berardi deal. We'll see what happens there. Personally, I love Caprari and would love to hang on to him for a bit longer. I would love to see him given a shot, but I think Sassuolo is a very good place for him to go if that should
very
if
well
that deal should.
Too.
Yeah, it's a good place for young Italian players to develop, and I think that if that deal comes to fruition, I also hope that Inter are smart enough to include a buyback clause or a first option clause for Caprari, because I think he'll explode at Sassuolo.
But at the same time, when you're putting all of your eggs into the Berardi basket, and by also and holding on to Caprari, aren't you kind of defenestrating Gabigol's chances at Inter, Matt, Nima, any thoughts?
I don't think so. I don't agree. I think Gabigol, the Gabigol situation is different. I think he can also play as a striker. He can play in as a winger and as a striker. And I think that the reason why he hasn't been played this season is more down to him not right. being, well, I mean, Italian football for a Brazilian player, which is tactically, or a Brazilian league compared to the Serie A, tactically is incomparable. The Serie A is much, much more tactical and much more difficult to adapt to. So I think this season is more for him just to kind of get into the swing of things for next season, in order for next season for him to kind of stake a place for real.
Matt, you have any comments on the Gabigol situation?
Do you think he will do? Will stake a place next season? Will he come into the four more?
I think that it's
go.
All right, I'll go. Look, just to point out, I had Gabigol as I believe number four in December's when we did the breakout stars of 2017. I had him number four in Breaking Lines' list of like stars who I thought would break out this year. When I did my top 20, U21 players in Serie A, I had him at number 12. So I think that kind of tells you, I mean, I don't think he's progressed enough under Pioli. I don't know if he's a Pioli player. And I see Berardi, this player who's, you know, great player, star potential. He's kind of stagnated at Sassuolo. You know, I think a few years ago we all thought he would be going to Juve, but the transfer windows pass and he remains at Sassuolo. So I think I can really see a big budget deal for Inter to Berardi, which in my opinion, with Perisic staying, in my opinion, that totally cuts out Gabigol's chance, and I think he leaves. But I hope it's not the case.
Well, see, I mean, personally, I think there's a lot of things that we need to address here in terms of Inter's transfer window, what's going to happen. Number one is Perisic, the Perisic situation. He wants to play Champions League football. He's always expressed that he's very open to playing in the Premier League. And I think that United are genuinely interested in signing him this summer.
As do I.
Then you also have the situation with Mauro Icardi, who has a transfer who has a clause which is valid for the first 2 weeks of July only to non-Italian Serie A, non-Italian clubs of 110 million. I mean, should a Real Madrid or a club of that stature come with 110 million euros and activate that clause, there's nothing Inter can do. And then we'll have to see if Icardi wants to stay. I wouldn't be so definitive on that issue. I think there's a lot. I'm not so sure he would stay if a Real Madrid came calling, or a PSG, or whatever you want to say, like a club of that kind of that stature were to come calling. I would not put it past him of him wanting to leave. So that would create a hole up front as well for Inter. But so I think there's a lot that remains to be seen. Personally, I'd like to hang on to Gabigol. I know for a fact that Suning see him as a prestige signing. They see him as a marquee signing, and I don't think they would that easily be prepared to part ways with him. I think they would like to see him go and like to see him stay or succeed. Maybe sending him on a loan deal, perhaps to kind of get him more acclimatized to Italian football. But we'll see what happens. I mean, there's a lot going to happen this summer because it's a summer without any European or World Cup or Copa America or anything like that. It's a long transfer summer, and there's a lot of teams who need to strengthen. I mean, if this deal with the Chinese sale of Milan goes through, there's going to be a lot happening there. Inter's restrictions in the financial fair play for UEFA, the UEFA financial fair play restrictions are going to be removed. So Suning are going to go spend like nobody's business. PSG are probably going to spend a lot. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of clubs, and there's a lot of things happening this summer.
I'm going to go with Perisic to United and Berardi to Inter, summer of 2017.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say the thing is though that Perisic is a left player, a left winger, and
Right,
Berardi
I
plays on the
know,
right.
and
So
exactly. So you've got to also find a replacement for Perisic as well. Yeah.
exactly. So
Maybe
I,
Keita even.
sorry.
Maybe Keita
Yeah,
or
there's talk of
Pepe.
Baldi-Keita, and we'll see what happens there. But we'll see. Bernardeschi is the one that Inter seems to have their heart set on. However, I personally think that he's got Juventus written all over him. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Matt?
Pardon?
You have any thoughts on Inter's transfers
Well,
strategy
yeah,
this summer?
I'd say I'd agree with you with Perisic to United. I think that's going to go ahead. It seems likely, but the fee seems a bit ridiculous, to be honest. But in terms of replacements, I think Keita would be a great fit. He would suit the system, and he's a great player, a great prospect, but I'm not sure Inter will get him if Lazio do end up getting Champions League football. I don't think they will, but if they do, then that would definitely not happen.
Well, even Europa and a slight finish, trying to nearly but failing to get Champions League football, I think it would still provide some motivation. I just want to say I don't think Perisic has really fulfilled his signing potential when he came from Wolfsburg personally. And that was the Wolfsburg of De Bruyne and many other stars, but I don't think Perisic has quite fulfilled it.
No, he's always been a player he's been quite inconsistent, I feel. He had a good Euros, and I did put him back on the market, but he really hasn't been the player that
Very
everyone
good
thought.
against Spain.
Yeah. No, he was very good. A lot of people were talking about a move in the summer. I'm not sure where to. I can't remember, but there was a lot of talk last summer.
To Suning's credit, though, I think that this January they've made, 3 months on, I think we can say that Roberto Gagliardini has been the best signing in the winter transfer window. Would you agree?
I think he's a. I think with Verratti and with Benassi, I think Italy has a
And
fantastic
possibly
center.
Diawara.
Yeah, exactly. I think they've
Yeah.
got an absolutely and you know with I think they've got an absolutely fantastic midfield trio there. I think
Right.
Gagliardini is a has shown he's only played 7 months of Serie A football. Ausilio, however, has been tracking him for 4 years now, as his agent revealed after the deal was made, and so that's why they chose Inter because Inter Ausilio have been monitoring this guy for a very, very long time. And so they managed to beat Juventus and everyone else to him. I think for Inter, when it comes to transfers, I mean, what's definitely, I mean, I reported it for Goal, and it's been confirmed by everyone since then, is the Manolas transfer. I think that is definitely going to happen. There are talks that
Really?
have, yeah, I know for a fact that Manolas and Roma have concluded negotiations for a new deal. So now both parties are basically just kind of waiting for the summer to come and then decide and sell him to the highest bidder. I know, I reported it for Goal, and I know this for a fact that you know, Inter have a deal in place in principle with Manolas in terms of personal details, but they have just started negotiating with Roma, and Roma are looking for 40, 45 million euros for Manolas, who I think is one of the best central defenders in Europe. So that's definitely going to happen. Ranocchia will probably, I mean, if Hull stay up, they'll probably sign him because he's been brilliant for them. Miranda is getting on a bit, so they probably won't offer him an extension, but he'll see his contract through. You got Gary Medel, who they're offering, they're talking of extending his contract. Murillo, they're talking about selling to, in order to bring De Vrij. So I think there will be quite a...
And Sainsbury, Andreoli and Sainsbury will probably leave as well.
Oh, Sainsbury's just on a loan, just for backup. Yeah, so he'll probably leave. Andreoli, yeah, I think that kind of, I think his tenure with Inter is over as well, which I think feel is a bit sad because he was very unlucky, because I always rated him as a pretty decent player, not maybe world class, but decent. Good to have in the team as a backup. But what Inter need to do most of all, and what they know, is the fullback situation. That is what needs to be addressed. Ricardo Rodriguez, they need to sort. You know, they need to sign two players.
Is it not confirmed that Rodriguez is coming?
You cut out.
Is it not confirmed that Rodriguez is coming, or what?
No, they there's very strong interest, but and he wants to come to Italy. But it's not done yet. It's far from done, but there's strong interest and there's talk.
Right. Well, there you have it, Breaking Lines listeners. Our exclusive scoop from Nima on the Kostas Manolas transfer. So he's off. But I do think, as good as this Inter project is, they will have to fend off several top European clubs. I could see United and City both coming in for him, just because of his, you know, immense quality as a center back. For Manolas,
Mourinho is not that keen on Manolas. More.
What about Pep?
Well, nah, not so much City either. PSG, yeah, he was. Look, Manolas was PSG. PSG was 1 hour away from signing him. A couple of seasons back. Instead, what happened was that Roma were looking, were okay to sell him, but they wanted to have a backup. So they went to Bayern Munich to try to sign Benatia. Benatia, then Bayern declined, so he remained with Roma, and that's how that was. But personally, I think it's Arsenal. If anyone you know snaps him up, it'll be Arsenal or PSG. It's those teams that are looking to it. Manolas isn't that high up on, as far as I know, on City's radar. Chelsea more in that case, if you know what I mean. Manolas is much more of a Conte defender than he is a Pep defender, I'd say.
I know there were links with Manolas to Chelsea, but I think Van Dijk seems like a player Conte would want a bit more.
Agree.
Right. Agreed. That would be a superb signing as well as Manolas. But I also would say that just Manolas has the sheer quality to get into most teams now, as opposed to when he started off after the transfer from Olympiacos, where, you know, he had a lot of doubters, he was pretty shaky. But I think that that's changed. Also, I think it's interesting that looking back at Suning's business this year, the transfers that were met with the most hype, the most fanfare, and applause were Ever Banega and João Mário, and both have seemed to struggle to get into Pioli's 11. They've struggled to really make an impact and show that they were worth bringing into the club. Meanwhile, the ones that were kind of met with the least real passion, Candreva starts most games, and Gagliardini, who was considered to, he was going to be a flop, he has probably been one of, if not maybe top two most important Inter players this term. So does that suggest that Inter need to try a new strategy, or what do you think?
No, I think the strategy they've tried has been very good. I think when it comes to Banega struggled the move from La Liga and that kind of open, free-flowing field to Serie A, that was only expected. João Mário, however, his first 6 months have been fantastic, I think, that I don't agree with that, that he's been a flop with that one bit. I think he's been one of the best players that Inter have had, especially in October, November, December. I thought it was fantastic. And also in January. Since then, he's had some trouble to get into the starting 11 because Banega has shown to be an absolutely phenomenal player. These past 2 months, he's really gone into it just before Christmas, and then after Christmas in January and February, and especially in March, he was simply sensational. And it's not just for the match against Cagliari and Atalanta; it's all the other games he's had as well. He's been simply fantastic. So I think this you know, I don't think that any of them have been a flop. And Gagliardini was never regarded to be a flop as well. He was supposed,
but he was expected. I think
no, he wasn't. He was the highest rated player by the Gazzetta, and it was absolutely not going to be a flop.
Really?
It was more, yeah, it was. He was more an issue of him being a question mark, that a guy who's only played 6 months
exactly.
in Serie A, will he be able to make that transition from Atalanta after playing in the Serie A for 6 months to Inter and make that transition? And can he do that? And he's shown that not only has he managed to do that, but he's probably the first name on the team sheet that Pioli writes, because he's simply fantastic.
So important.
He's unbelievable. He's the best midfielder and the most important player at Inter since, you know, Thiago Motta. He fills that precise role. He ties the midfield together from defense and from going forward. And also, I would like this, you know, he's not a new signing, but the way he's played since Pioli took over, and with the arrival of Gagliardini, Kondogbia has been fantastic.
Exactly.
And those two together, it's a dream midfield. They're both 22. They're playing better and better together. So I'm really happy with our midfield. Again, Inter need to sign, what Inter need to do is...
Fullbacks.
Fullbacks, central defenders, and depending on what happens with Perisic and Icardi, maybe a striker and a winger.
Right. I think that despite Inter not being where they want to be, you know, they're sixth, I think that Pioli has improved most players. I see, you know, D'Ambrosio putting in solid shifts. Even Brozovic has elevated his transfer value, not with that game against Atalanta, but against Sampdoria, excuse me. But he has... maybe shown some value to potential suitors, and Kondogbia has really escaped, or at least attempted to escape his tag as a flop. So for the most part, I do believe that that this Pioli appointment has improved most players on Inter.
Definitely, I think Pioli has been. I mean, the stats don't lie. I mean, he's got higher. He's got a better beginning than. I mean, I think he's just beaten by Leonardo when it comes to point average in his first games. He's got a higher than Mancini. He's got higher than Mourinho. He's done really well, and I personally, I think Pioli was exactly what Inter needed. I still think that, you know, if Simeone becomes free in the summer, we should take him. But if we don't, I say give Pioli a chance, because I think he's been brilliant.
So why is it, if, I mean, considering he's had such great success at Inter and Lazio, I would add, by the way, why is it that he's still considered, I don't think his reputation equates to his achievements. I still think he's mixed in with the Nerazzurri. And I don't think he's getting the credit he's earned, personally. You think that's the case, or?
Let me put it to you this way. I think what Pioli has shown in his time at Inter is also the very reason why he will never probably be one of the world's biggest managers in the world. And that's simply because against top teams like Juventus, Roma, he doesn't have the quality to outmaster and out-tact, you know, out-think. His tactical ability isn't good enough to beat teams like Napoli, Roma, where, you know, his points have come against the, you know, the outside of the top four teams. He's beaten basically everyone except for the Sampdoria game. He's beaten everyone. But when it comes to the really big teams, the Juventus, the Roma, the Napoli, he just doesn't cut it. And that's, I think, is his Achilles heel in term when it comes to man to man, when it comes to, when he goes up against the biggest coaches in the world, he just doesn't cut, he just gets out coached.
Right. I think that is a mark of it. I think that in terms of being consistent and getting his players to perform against the small games that they're no not normally motivated to play well against, I think that's a testament to his quality as a motivator. But when you see him struggling in these big games, it really is a mark against his record as a top tactician. And to get along with that, I mean, Inter fans, the Nerazzurri, they want to return to the European elite like they were under with Mourinho. And so they need the right players. And I'm not sure if they all agree that Pioli has the quality, the sufficient quality to get them there.
I think you'll get us into the top four. I think that's not an issue. And next season the top four gets you to the Champions League, so I'm not worried. I say give the guy another season.
Matt.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with Nima there. Pioli isn't a guy who's able to break that barrier of Roma, Napoli, Juventus, but he definitely is a guy who could overtake Lazio. I mean, I think Inter potentially have the third best squad maybe in the league.
Possibly, yeah.
So there's no reason why they shouldn't be getting up there, but with Pioli, I don't think they're going to be able to
Are
break past
you
them.
saying they have a better squad than Roma or Napoli?
I think they have a better squad than Napoli, but
Wow.
that's just me. I think Napoli's defense really lets them down. It's
I
I think it's quite
agree.
fragile.
I
I
think that
agree with Matt.
Gulam.
Has the capability to be better than it is.
I agree with Matt there.
I definitely do see a ton of Gliazzurri wanting to improve on Gulam. And as far as Serie A goes, I think that there are a ton of more than ever, there are so many great young left backs, Bareca, Adam Messina, that are there for the taking. So I do think he's expendable, and I definitely can see a move to replace him, as well as Isai, who has disappointed after a stellar breakout season in Sarri's debut season. I think they're more willing to give him a shot because of his age and what he's shown before, though.
Yeah, I think Napoli are definitely going to be looking for a left back in the summer. I mean, they have to. They could also do with another central defender, maybe even a goalkeeper. That's the thing. They need to overhaul that back line.
Do you think that, and of course they need a new goalkeeper. I mean, that's not a question. I have no idea to this day why Napoli didn't get Sportiello, why Fiorentina got Sportiello, and why Sportiello isn't starting. But going back to the center back part in Sarri's tactics, I think that when they brought in Maksimovic, that was what he had in mind. But I think in such a defensive league like Italy, I think that when you have two ball playing center backs, there's not enough balance, maybe, or at least for this Napoli side, which is so young. I'm not sure if you can. I think you may need a destroying someone who's just no nonsense, like Maksimovic's partner, Kamil Glik, under in Torino,
Yeah, no, that is pretty much what Raul Albiol does, and he does have that what's the word? He has a
The
presence in the
dream
dressing
to,
room, I
yeah,
think, as well. So he is a
right.
figure for the younger players, but he's not got the quality they need. I mean, against Real Madrid, they went 1-0 up, but with players like that at the back, it's
Yeah,
not a
it's not
team
feasible.
that can hold out against the best. Even if Sarri is so tactically good. It doesn't make a difference.
I think for Napoli, the most important thing for them is to make sure that they hang on to Dries Mertens. I think having,
Really?
they, I mean, that front three with Mertens, Cajon, and Insigne, I think they need to hang on to those guys one more season. And personally, I love their midfield with Diawara, with Jorginho, with Alan,
Hamsik.
Hamsik. I mean, I think it's
Marco Rude.
I just love that team. I think their main focus should be a left back and a central
Right.
defender, but I don't
And
think
a goalkeeper. Yeah.
definitely. I think Pepe Reina is a bit of a clown.
Yes. On and off the
His antics can only be matched by those of Joe Hart,
pitch.
who's the biggest
Indeed.
bozo. The biggest bozo in the Serie A. But no, but having said that, I think what they need to sort out is their defense. But I don't know if Maurizio Sarri is the guy to do it, because I
Yeah.
think that his, if anything, Sarri football is pretty much, it's not tiki-taka because it doesn't play in triangles, but it is very free-flowing attacking football. And
Extremely
when
free flowing.
you've got that, when you've got those, you need to have a midfield and a top three that
Yeah.
run and fight and help out defensively as much as they can. Personally, I think that the dream for me is that Maurizio Sarri. I mean, I'm not making a prediction here. I'm not saying this is just me dreaming here. I would love to see Maurizio Sarri coach Barcelona after Luis Enrique, because I
As
think
would I, as would I.
his tactical approach to the game, together with the Barcelona squad and the mentality that is there, that would be a very interesting combination.
That
It
would
would
be
be
fantastic. A match made in heaven, I believe.
very interesting to see how that pans out, because I think with the kind of, they've tried to kind of, with Luis Enrique, Barcelona tried to go back to the pre-Pep kind of,
Correct.
Pep's first season tactically,
Yeah.
and what happened was with the appointment of Luis Enrique, and it's kind of, it worked really well. I mean, they won the treble again, but it becomes kind of, they become rather easy to read. And I think that with Sarri, he brings another dimension to that. He plays free-flowing attacking football, but he doesn't per se, he's not, his football isn't addicted to possession per se. It's a little bit more similar to Jurgen Klopp's football in the sense that it's more direct, but there's still an aspect of possession, retaining possession within it, which I think is very interesting. So I'd love to see that.
Yeah. To your point, Nima, which we'll get back to, I think that has been the kind of mark of Luis Enrique's term, predictable yet effective counterattacking football. However, we're seeing maybe a final act, with the 3-3-1-3, which in Luis Enrique's final months, which could bring some interesting benefits. As far as Lazio go, though, I think we've got there's supposed to be a mid-level European team along with maybe Sevilla and Tottenham, if you will. But they've got the likes of Milik and Rogue and Alan sitting on the bench. These are and Maksimovic too, on some occasions. I mean, these are players who've proved themselves in Europe before. I'm sure they would start for several other clubs of the same tier. So I do think that it's impressive that they are not only performing as way, but they're also holding on to squad depth. Not even starters that you start and you flock out to potential suitors, but squad depth for not really a typical European challenger,
Well, no, I mean, Milik, if you remember, Milik was scoring goals for fun before he was injured. And then
Right.
they tried to play Gabbiadini and it didn't work out. So they sold him and brought in Pavoletti for reasons I will never understand. And then they
Well, De
gave him.
Laurentiis, right?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think it was kind of the I mean, if Gabbiadini isn't giving you what you want, you don't bring Pavoletti, who's just a
Yeah.
poor man's Gabbiadini.
Exactly.
But no, I think for me, the way I look at it is that Milik will probably retake that starting lineup position. If
Over who?
I think given that when you play in the Champions League, when you play in the Serie A, the Coppa Italia, you need to have two world-class players in every position if you want to compete. And I think with Mertens and those three plus Mertens, sorry, with those three and Milik, that gives you depth and quality. So I don't see an issue there. Milik just came back from a rather difficult injury as well. So I don't really see contradiction there. But yeah, I mean, when if we look at the teams, I think we're going to see a lot of interesting things happen at Juventus. I think we're going to see quite a few interesting things happen at Roma when Monchi takes over, which we're going to talk about, I guess, as well. And Inter as well, Milan. If the Chinese finally manage to get Milan away from the dying claws of the dinosaur known as Silvio Berlusconi, if he ever gives that up, they can pry Milan out of his greedy clutches, which would be amazing for Milan and Italian football, because Italian football needs Milan to be a top team. I think the most important thing there would be to extend Donnarumma's contract to make sure that he becomes the culture bearer for the club. That's something that's really important, that they can build the team around him. And then they have the Locatelli, they have other youngsters as well. So I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of interesting things happening in all the big teams. With Juventus, I think if they win the Champions League, which would not be impossible, I think they definitely have the quality to do it. They have the quality to do it, either this season or next season. In fact, Allegri's trying to go for another treble, I think. The Serie A is in the final of the Coppa Italia. So he's going for the treble. So we'll see what happens.
Starting to look like 2015 again, too.
Yeah, it really is. And that 4-2-3-1 with Pjanic and Khedira in deep, and then Dybala as a trequartista, I just absolutely love it. I think it's beautiful to watch. And Allegri is a very underrated coach. I really rate him. I think he's a brilliant coach. I think he's done a brilliant job taking over from Conte and actually building on what Conte did and getting the team to lift and play. I mean, last season, if you ask me, I think Juventus played the most attractive football in all of Europe. I think that those matches against Bayern Munich, that double tie there was the best two matches of the season. Wow. It was incredibly good to see.
For a neutral perspective, it was.
Yeah, it really was. It was fantastic football. So, I'm really keen to see what happens. We'll see what happens. I'm really, really keen to see what happens. I my personal dream final of the Champions League would be Bayern Munich against Juventus, because I think they're the two best teams.
Wow.
I think Juve could go all the way, to be fair. They have got the capability to beat Barcelona in the next round. So
they do. But I do think would you agree that Juventus have been the best team in Europe this year since New Year's?
I'd probably say so. Bayern have dropped off from what they used to be. Real Madrid obviously have still got that incredible record of scoring every game, but they lost the one of winning. Barcelona, well, we all know about Barcelona. They're great, but they're also not. Juventus, they just wipe the floor with everyone. It's quite incredible to us.
It is. Just for a second, for the Pavoletti transfer, I do think it had pretty much negative repercussions for every party, because for Genoa, when Pavoletti left, I think Simeone's form, El Cholito, Giovanni, Simeone's form dropped off as well, because he doesn't have that same level of competition. For Napoli, it didn't make sense, and for the Sarri De Laurentiis relationship, it just caused another hole in it, you know? And so I just want to touch up. So I think that Allegri's reputation has increased this season, because I think that he's proven that he can play beautiful football as well as great defensive football. But just to touch up on, Sarri having defensive issues, which is true, and maybe that is due to the defenders. Look at the team that are in fourth. Look at Lazio's defenders. You've got Wallace, Lulic, De Vrij, who is constantly injured, Jordan Lukaku. These are not elite defenders, and yet they're in fourth. So for me, that is why Simone Inzaghi should be coach of the year. Would you agree?
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was just gonna say I would agree with that, but I think Lazio play a more conservative style, to be honest, and I think a lot of people in Italy like what Sarri's doing. They like to see what he's doing.
I like what Sarri is doing more than Inzaghi. But they do have better players, to be fair.
There is that romance in Italy where they enjoy what he's pulling off with them. They although they aren't going to come out as winners of the title, they have done very well in the last 2 years to stick right up there, despite the fact that their defence is very shoddy.
Personally, I think Gasperini is the coach of the year in the Serie A because what he did
Another
with
good
the,
choice.
I mean, with the football that Atalanta have been playing and given their, I mean, what I think Icardi earns what a year what Atalanta's entire year squad costs per year, and if you,
Yeah,
if you,
exactly.
but we can't really talk about. But the thing is, it's not just it's not just Gasperini. When you talk about Atalanta, you cannot disregard Pierpaolo Marino, who no longer is at the club, but is probably, in my opinion, the best sporting director in Italian sporting director of the last 30 years. This is the guy who put together the Napoli in the 80s with Maradona. He's been at Atalanta. He's actually put together this Napoli as well. So he's been at the club twice. He left because of a certain Luciano Moggi, who was in Napoli, because he didn't want to work with him. So no, this is again Marino showing that he is second to none when it comes to creating and building a team from nothing. And that's what it is. I mean, Kessié, Gagliardini, Paco
Paco
Gomez,
Gomez, Caldara.
Caldara, exactly. Got what's his name, Conti. I mean, it's unbelievable how.
Especially with the exits of Sportiello and Gagliardini as well.
Well, there's a reason why Sportiello was even, you know, he became big there. I mean, Cialdini was another player as well. I mean, he's done this time and time and time again. Pierpaolo Marino. He's fantastic. I mean, Lavezzi, Hamsik, no one knew who these players were when he signed them. Nobody knew who they were, but he brought them there. I mean, again, he's built Napoli twice. He's done with it with Atalanta. He's in my opinion, the best sporting director in Italian football for the past 30, 40 years. I think he's second to none. And although what we're seeing now is the fruits of those labors, basically.
Right. And I do think that, well, you have, I think it's, first of all, I think it's a two-man race between Gasperini and Inzaghi. While you have teams like Lazio and Chievo, who, you know, they play really ugly football, maybe, if you want to exaggerate. But whereas Napoli and Atalanta play beautiful football, I think that probably gives Gasperini the edge. But at the same time, there is still that love in Italy for Catenaccio football, that respect for what Inzaghi is doing, for example. Turning away from that, I want to just touch up on one. We talked about coach of the year. Who deserves player of the year in Italy? Because I think that Juventus, it's bizarre. They've had probably their best season in recent years. Definitely their best after Christmas form. But I would say that their best player has been Alexandro. And I'm not sure if I can't remember the last time a left back won player of the year. So then you've got players along the table: Belotti, Icardi, Amsic, Nainggolan, all deserving. Who wins it for you guys?
I'll let Nima go first. I need to think about this one.
I mean, the Serie A player of the year for me has been, it's kind of a little bit of a tie between Gagliardini and Donnarumma. I think Donnarumma has taken steps this season to show that. I mean, I'm the oldest here, so I remember when Buffon made his Serie A debut when he was 17 years old for Parma in a 0-0 in a 0-0 draw against Milan at home in Ennio Tardini, and Donnarumma is better than Buffon was when he was 18. And
is
this
he
season,
better now? Is he better now?
I think Buffon is still ahead of him if you just compare them, you know, first, you know, prima facie value. But if you look at them, but if you compare when Buffon was 18 and you compare to Donnarumma, who is 18 now, Donnarumma's miles better. And his, if he, you know, and his maturity and the way he plays, and his, he's such a modern goalkeeper as well. I mean, if you disregard that ridiculous mistake he made, which I think is, he made a mistake. Buffon has made thousands of mistakes. Everyone has made mistakes. That's not what defines a goalkeeper. Everyone makes mistakes, but it's this kind of consistency, and also high level with Buffon that has made him probably the best, greatest goalkeeper of all time. But when it comes to Donnarumma, I think he is the greatest goalkeeping talent that I've seen in my my life. I've never seen anything like it. He's big, he's quick, he's fast, he's got good feet, he's strong, he's huge. I mean, just his height. I mean, and for a big guy to be able to move like that, he's his cat-like reflexes. No, he has everything. Donnarumma has everything. And this season, I think in particular, he's showed that he has that he really has what it takes. He's taken that extra step that everyone was hoping that I personally was hoping as well that he would take. But if you want to look at who's been consistently him and Gagliardini, I think have been consistently the best players in the Serie A. I mean, Gagliardini with his first 7 seasons with Atalanta, fantastic, and ever since joining Inter, brilliant. So I think if you look at who's been consistently performing at the highest level, it's got to be one of Donnarumma, Gagliardini, and also Raja Nainggolan, who I think has been simply sensational. His form this season, I mean, it's not a surprise. He's been this good, but now he plays as a winger. I mean, this guy has played in every single position except for goalkeeper for Roma, and he's done it really, really well. He's been a defensive holding midfielder. He's been a box-to-box midfielder. He's been a trequartista. He's now a winger. He's done everything, and he does it because he's such an intelligent player, and he's such a quality player. So for me, it's one of those three.
Obviously, I would say that Nainggolan is the best player right now in this moment. He's the best player in Italy for me, and I think that's actually been that way since December personally.
I'd have him as my player of the year. I think he is at the center of everything good that Roma do, and I think without him they wouldn't be where they are.
I'm not so sure myself. I would definitely put Gagliardini and Donnarumma both in my team of the year for Italy, but it's tough because normally you want to give it to an attacker, no? But I think that the defenders and the midfielders and the goalkeepers have outshadowed them even with this amazing Coppa Cenere race. For me, it's tough, especially since Napoli have declined this season after their first season, so I would have wanted to give it to Amsic, but I think I'd have to go with Nainggolan as well.
Now, for me, it's those three that have been performing the most consistently and at the top highest level. But when it comes to having, I mean, who's had the highest peak? There's no doubt that Nainggolan has been better than the others too. But I'm really impressed with how well the Gagliardini and Donnarumma have done, and also Belotti's explosion, Immobile's, you know, and Dzeko's resurgence. It's been a very, very good, and also Mertens, who after struggling a little while has scored, has been sensational. Higuain has been decent as well. We can't forget him. I mean, so and Dybala. I mean, I love Dybala. What a player that is! He's got so much football in him. It's absolutely just magical to see. So no, there's been a lot of good performances this season. But for me, it's those three that have been consistently performing at the highest level with a little star for Nainggolan.
All right, and I noticed you didn't put any Juve players. If you could give it to one Juve player, who would it be?
Dybala. Without a shadow of a doubt, Dybala. I mean, when he plays football, he's one of those players, in my opinion, that it doesn't really matter who he plays for. Just watching him is a pleasure. It makes me smile when he plays. Like he's the reason why I started writing about football. That kind of player. He just makes you happy to play because he's so damn good and he's so brilliant. And now for me, Dybala is brilliant, and I don't think we've seen anything yet.
No. I agree with that. Yeah, Dybala is definitely the star in that team. Although they do work incredibly well as a unit, the entire first team, he is the one that's your eye is always drawn to him.
Yeah, I would say that despite Higuain, Bonucci, all putting in great performances, I would give it to Alexander personally, but. Just to talk about Dybala, we really haven't seen anything yet. You know, this kid, when Pogba left for the most money ever, Juventus needed a new face. And I think that for me, Dybala stepped up to be not only a future, but the present. I think he gives this Juve team what they have lacked in for really since like the days of Nedved and Zidane. You know, that feeling, that appreciation of beautiful football that I don't think you can find anywhere else in one player's laces across Serie A. And he is my favorite player in Italy for me. And I think that he's, I'm not sure if I want to say that he has Ballon d'Or potential, but really there's nothing else better than watching Dybala in Serie A, in my opinion.
One day he could be in that Ballon d'Or conversation, but it's
Yeah.
very hard to predict such a thing. I remember when Götze was at his peak, you know, people were saying he's going to win the Ballon d'Or in a couple of years, but
Yeah.
now we're looking at him now and saying there's just no chance
I'm
it's
not
going to
even sure
happen.
if he's going to continue with football. It's a sad
Exactly,
story.
yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a separate story. But yeah, with Dybala, you never know. You know,
No.
Ballon d'Or is a different kind of thing. We'll see how it comes out when Messi and Ronaldo both exit the competition for that, really. Until Messi goes, I can't see anyone else stepping up to that.
So you think he has the highest potential of any player in Italy?
In Italy, probably in Italy, yeah.
Yeah.
But in the world, there are probably a few more players I would put ahead of him.
Well, as I said on my thread with the best U21 talents in Serie A, where obviously Dybala didn't qualify because of his age, but Donnarumma,
Donnarumma, yeah.
he's incredible, and I think that. But what's really, if you are, if you do, just, you know, if you have followed Milan since he came in, it is remarkable that errors like the one against Pescara are the exception rather than the rule. I think that tells you everything you need to know about Donnarumma, because, you know, coaches don't usually give youth goalkeepers, they usually don't even put them on the bench, you know, because it's so risky. And whereas Donnarumma is the face of AC Milan at this point.
No, it is exceptional for his age when he first came in, and even now it's ridiculous. I remember when he made his debut and thinking this guy is not this young, it's a joke.
Yeah,
It
it's incredible.
is remarkable, and he probably for an under 21, he probably has the highest potential of any player. But as a goalkeeper, I think personally I like to separate that from, you
Yes,
know, the
of
outfield.
course. But
But
not even with potential. I think just talking about current ability and looking at Donnarumma, how he compares to other goalkeepers just overall in the world, he's up there. He's with the elite.
He definitely is. I'm not sure if
Not
he'd
the
get.
best, clearly, but
I'm not sure if he'd get into some of the best teams. Well, I think he'd probably get into the Barcelona team. I can't. I don't see why not.
maybe. I think, yeah, Nima, go ahead.
He's top five. I think the best
Yeah.
goalkeeper in the world is the crazy German in Bayern Munich's goal, who I
Yeah.
absolutely love.
Crazy
I think,
German.
yeah, I think he's brilliant.
Yep.
Neuer is number one for me, followed very closely by Mr. Buffon, and then De Gea on third. In third,
No Courtois?
fourth for me.
I
I
think
think
Oblak has to be up there, I think.
Oblak definitely has to be it.
Yeah,
See,
definitely.
it's tough because I feel like he is worthy of to be in the top five, but yeah, it's
But the
tough.
thing is, I mean, the thing is that if you, it was a long time ago when we had so many good goalkeepers all come out at once. I mean, it's
Yeah.
basically been Casillas and Buffon for a very long time.
Right.
But I definitely rate, what's his name, Donnarumma as just
Yeah.
outside the top five. He's definitely
Yeah.
top 10, but he's just outside the top five right
Yeah.
now. But he, I mean, he's only 18. He just turned 18, and
He
there's
just turned
that's that
18.
is so insane about him. Is he's
Yeah.
as I said, as I alluded to earlier, his cat-like reflexes, his movement, his strength, his feet, his technique, and also he's really tall, and he's big, and that's, you know, he's got everything. You know, he's no other comparisons in between them. But when it comes to what makes Ibrahimovic so unique is the fact that he's got that fantastic technique despite that huge size. and being so big. And that's what makes, I think, Donnarumma so unique, is that he's such a big guy, but he has such composure, such technique, and such control and reflexes. So, you know, as I said before, he's the greatest goalkeeping talent I've seen in my life.
What he has got going for him as well is he can play as that understudy for Buffon while Buffon's still playing. They can still meet up in the Italy setup, and he can give him that guidance, which could help him even more.
Well, some cruel tongues would say that Juventus are probably going for the kill by signing him this season or next.
I don't see it happening. I think if Milan want to, you know, be a serious project, they can't let Donnarumma go. But they definitely can't let Donnarumma go straight to Juventus and replace Buffon. I think they'll sign Alex Moret, and I think Milan, I can't see them bending to anyone, even Real Madrid, but we'll have to see.
It depends on who buys Milan. Yeah. I mean, if Milan continue to live in La La Land and Berlusconi doesn't sell the club and you have another, you know, you have another mercato similar to the ones they've had these past 3-4 years, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he left. He's got Raiola as his agent, so you know, and Raiola make deals happen.
Mm-hmm. No, I just think that first of all, we are privileged to witness the rise and the birth of what, in my opinion, is going to be a future legend in Gianluigi Donnarumma. I think that with a mix of terrible administration as well as, you know, poor coaching and stuff, Milan have been in a dire situation really since Zlatan and Thiago Silva left. And now they just have that one slither of hope. You know, they've got this world-class talent that just came out of thin air, and now he's theirs. And I think if they give it away, then it's another dark period for them.
No, definitely. I'd agree with that, yeah. It will say a lot about how Milan play out for the next decade or so, whether they keep Donnarumma.
So for our final topic, I want to move back to the capital. I can't say for sure, but it certainly seems like Roma, I think that Roma will get Monchi. And I think that with Roma, when you look at the last 5 years, there aren't many more serial underachievers, in my opinion, in Europe. Just so good, so consistent, and yet can never seem to really advance in Europe, can never seem to advance in terms of silverware. So what does this do to the club's mentality? What does this do to Roma?
I think this stops them from buying players that are, to be quite honest, terrible.
Like who?
Like, you look at the players they bring in on loan. Thomas Lamarlin, why is he there?
I have no idea why they took him from us either.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. You think that now with Monchi, if he joins, then that sort of thing will stop. They'll start targeting players who can help the club and who aren't going to just weigh them down. That's what you'd hope, at least.
Right.
If you look at Monchi's track record, I think what he's really good at is finding the right players that aren't that well known because of his fantastic network of scouts, etc. And he's very good at building teams. I mean, he built, I don't know how many Serie A teams he's built with Juan de Ramos, for example, the perfect example of a brilliant team. And also, what's his name, Emery as well. I mean, he's built teams, and that's what Roma need to do now, because after, you know, Nainggolan will stay as long as he wants to stay, because he loves that club, apparently, which I think is really nice. He has to have players who have that feeling. But I mean, it depends. I mean, if Chelsea come with a 60, 80 million pound offer in the summer, I don't think Roma can fend off advances anymore. So, but I think what he will do is he will probably get you know, he'll bring players that will elevate Roma's level, and hopefully what they can do, which they failed to do under Spalletti, or Sabatini at least, is to kind of win titles. They need to win titles. They, you know, a Coppa Italia, you know, they need to win, you know, they need to start winning titles and starting to, you know, he needs to kind of shore up that defense a little bit, because I think, I mean, if I've looked, I mean, I was just looking the other day at all the lineup that Roma have had these past 5, 6 years. To me, it's just ridiculous that they have not won or at least been closer to Juventus, because if you look at player for player on paper, they're not that far behind, but it's been lacking on the bench. It's there, that's where it's been lacking. And if they can, you know, if they can sort that out, if they can, you know, if Ancelotti would ever to come back to his beloved Roma and to play, to coach that team, I think that would be, I think that then that would be really interesting. I think they just one really good coach, and you know, obviously for their next cycle, because this cycle is coming to an end. But once they've got sorted it out, they need to find a good coach, because they're, in my opinion, Roma have everything to be. They should be fighting for titles. They should be in the quarterfinal semis of the Champions League. You know what I mean? But that's the kind of quality they are, and the fact that they don't do that is just, there's no excuse for it.
But at the same time, yeah, go ahead, Matt.
I think I was going to just add, I read Carlo Ancelotti's autobiography, and he did mention in that he wished to go to Roma at some point as a manager. So whether that will happen after Bayern, who knows?
But
But
I do
that.
think that, you know, Juventus, they are for me the best run club in Europe, because they make the most out of their resources, because they hire good coaches, and also they have created a dynasty on Serie A, and whether it be, you know, buying their the best player, arguably the best player of their two close competitors in Higuain and Pjanic last summer, or whatever, you know, they've been first, and Roma have been second. There's back to second. They've been second for I can't remember, like, past four, 3 out of the past 4 years or something. So it's tough, but Roma, for this Monchi, who for me is the best sporting director in the world, for Monchi to Roma to be considered a success, they need to win Serie A, because I just don't think that challenging does it, really. I think that in the modern day and age, what Juventus are doing is incredible, but at the same time, Roma need to they need to break that dynasty.
I think personally it depends more on what Juventus do than what Roma do, if Juventus are ever going to be
Right.
toppled anytime soon.
But I'm just
Because
saying, in as far as the media goes, don't you, I mean, is there really any progress? I know that Juventus are so well run and it's nearly impossible to break that dynasty, but is there really any progress if it's another year of Juventus in first and Roma in second, or?
there isn't. I mean, obviously you want titles, and that is the end goal. But
Yeah.
with Roma, you feel like, well, with Serie A, you feel like Juventus has such a tight grip. Just
Yeah.
getting closer to them is an achievement in its own right. So I think it will be baby steps, because honestly, with Juventus, I don't see them giving up the titles for another maybe 2 years, maybe depending on Rome, what Roma do. It's just they're too good. They've got too much depth, and they're too capable of taking the best players from any team they want.
Right. Nima, anything
Yeah,
else to add?
no. I think the event. I mean, personally, I think Roma's new stadium will help them so much,
Right.
because it will raise the revenue. It will give them a much bigger stability that they need. So I have big. I really. If I were a Roma fan, I'd be very optimistic, because they're going into a future which is rather bright. They have one of the most sought after the sporting directors in the world coming, who will try to implement his philosophy onto the squad, and also the technical side. So I think, depending on how he plays his cards, and depending on how he handles the politics of it all. I think, you know, given the stadium as well, I think the Roma's going into, I'd say the future is actually brighter for Roma than in the summer aspects, actually, for the Milanese clubs who still don't have any idea regarding their own stadium, because that
is... And they already have their standing as a European club, not some Europa challenger, you know?
No, exactly. They've been playing consistently in the Champions League for the past 5-6 years, and that's something that gives you a financial possible stability as well. And if you add that together with the stadium, and I think the American owners are actually really good. I think Di Benedetto and them have been doing great in marketing Roma and their deals with Disney, etc. And their reach out to grow in America and abroad as well. I think Italian football is finally coming back from about 10 years of being asleep. I think finally it's
waking about up. To awaken. Yeah, and that's why we are teaching so much content on Breaking Lines regarding this awakening giant. But also, I do think that one cannot underestimate the impact that Juventus's switch from the Stadio delle Alpi to Juventus Stadium had, just in terms of revenue, in terms of really coming from Serie B and getting back to the helm of Serie A. That was a lot of that was due to shrewd planning, but also the stadium.
Absolutely, I'd say so. It's a stadium like no other in Italy. And if Roma could replicate that themselves, then who knows what they'll be able to achieve.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, to Nima, to my guest Nima Tavalli and Matt Aldridge, thank you so much for coming on our podcast today. Very
nice
good.
Thank you for having us.
Very good birthday present. Hope you can both come on again.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
And it was a great pleasure to talk Calcio for past hour or so. Just another reminder, check out Louis Jacques' brilliant essay on how politics and golden generations in football are intertwined. It's absolutely superb. We will be back in 2 weeks with the English version of Christian Hanaj and Andres Cordero on our podcast. We will be back in Spanish in 1 week, next Friday. And this has been Breaking Lines podcast with your hosts, Zach Lowy, Matt Aldridge, and Nima Tavalli. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
You bet. You bet.
All right. Until later, guys. Bye.